And welcome. I'm Dr. Mona Kular, and this is To Immunity and Beyond. I'm a medically trained doctor and nutrition and health coach, and I love helping people find the very best version of themselves. This show is all about living well, feeling well, and most importantly, aging well. The immune system is essentially the body's wellness system, so by understanding and supporting it, we can all reach an optimal level of health. I'll be having conversations with a wide range of experts from around the world on all the areas that can support our immune system to help us live healthier for longer. Let's live life better. Hi and welcome. Today I'm joined by Anastasis Zanis, a yoga instructor and Oxygen Advantage Master Breathing Instructor. We'll be discussing the role of yoga and breathwork in the management of stress and finding the way to our true selves, covering both science and spirituality. Anastasis also very kindly shares a 25% discount code at the end for his Yoga for Beginners course and his 2-week breathwork course, which are both on his website. This is a great conversation for anybody looking to learn more about managing stress in their lives or just finding ways to be more true to themselves. Hello, Anastasis. Thank you so much for joining me today. We're going to be talking about all sorts of things, stress-related, breathwork, yoga, and more. I wonder if we could start with just finding out how you came to be a yoga instructor and a breathwork practitioner as well, your journey to this space in your life.
First of all, thank you very much, Mona, for having me. It's an honor, and I hope those listening to it will take some things away that they can apply. Ultimately, we want people to change their lives with these things that we will cover, not to stay just on the theory level.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a good start. I think people can relate to other people's stories. And I had very little to do with the health world. I was working for a bank. I was actually working as a currency derivatives trader, which is as far away from yoga as I guess you can get. But and the reality is that I was looking for a way to get more flexible. I was at the time being physically active primarily through going to the gym. And it was not until someone took me to a yoga class, I got hooked. I got hooked because, as we know, we get hooked into things and they make us feel in a certain way. If there is not an emotional attachment to something, chances are that we will do it only for a short period of time. The things that make us happy, whether it is yoga, whether it is any lifestyle change that I know that you are big on, and you're all about lifestyle changes, and we will stick with them. They will be effortless and we will only be looking for more and more. And that's what happened. It's yoga changed the way I was feeling. I caught myself feeling more calm in the hours after my two yoga classes that I was religiously attending in the beginning than I was the rest of the week. And who doesn't want to feel calm, right? Even the most stressful of us. And that was it. It was breathing was came into my life and much later on. And it was not until I'm very briefly zoom forward a few years. I was already teaching yoga at the time. I had left my job in banking, and I was listening to a podcast in which the interviewer, I don't listen to podcasts much, but in these few snippets, it occurred that I heard that the interviewer was asking Wim Hof, that was like 2015, so shortly before he became very popular, to tell him how important body temperature control is and how it has been part of the yoga tradition for thousands of years. Yet at the moment, a lot of people teach yoga and it is more of aerobics, like they will go through poses, but there is nothing about controlling your nervous system. And that hit a nerve on me, like hit home on me. I have to say that I was someone that was taking hot showers all my life. My mother would always complain for turning the whole bathroom into a steam room after every one of my showers. And I thought, okay, you know, I need to delve deeper into it. So that's what I did. I jumped on the wagon. I signed up. I attended the first international training that Wim ran in 2016. And yeah, this triggered, my interest in breath work. Later on, I ended up teaching with Patrick McCune, who I believe we will cover more later on. And that's my story. So it always starts with something small and emotional, something curious. And again, I want to make it relevant to the audience. If something triggers you at the moment, if you have a curiosity or you feel good after doing a breathing session or something, make it, commit to it. Like, see, what would happen if I was to do that for 60 days? Turn it into a little challenge. And who knows, maybe you will leave your job and become a yoga teacher.
I totally agree with you that we have to have a connection with something in order for it to, well, to give us that initial motivation to explore it more, and then for it to become, you know, a part of our lives and something that then becomes perhaps a habit or just a normal part. And that initial spark or that connection is the key to that, really, isn't it? So when you find that, it's incredible. And as you say, for anybody who experiences that or is curious about that, the minute you find it, you really should try and, you know, expand on that and stick with it to see where it might take you. Just going back, when you first started the yoga, then you were still working in your job in finance and banking. You noticed you felt calmer after your sessions. Did you also find you felt calmer perhaps through the week, or did it affect how you, because that's quite a stressful job to be in, anything finance related tends to be. Did you feel there was an impact there when you were doing yoga whilst you were still working?
Yeah, I mean, it did have an effect for during outside the yoga hours, but I would say that there is apart from the emotional effect that I had in the hours following the yoga practice, I quickly realized the biggest benefit that yoga has, which in my opinion is not become more flexible, which is what attracted to me there, but it is to understand your body. This is something that I promise every one of my clients, if they have not practiced yoga before, or even if they have, because yeah, I think weightlifting, running, you name it, every type of physical activity is amazing. And you don't need to practice yoga, but if you want to understand your body, there is nothing better. And this I found very interesting at the time. And as someone that always enjoyed sports, I found it so fascinating. So this was this relationship that I started developing and made me feel that I would not say it was a calling, but I want to know more. I want to discover, you know, why, what does it take to be able to do the splits? Although at the time, it was for me as alien. I would almost get upset if I would see someone being in splits, because it made me feel so bad for being so unflexible myself. But then over time, being on splits, it was not really any a stretch of imagination. It was just one more pose.
Yeah. Wow. I love that you've said that, actually. I think so many of us are actually very disconnected from, I mean, actually from so many elements in our lives, including our emotions sometimes and our feelings, you know, our hunger cues. And as you say, you know, our body and how it works, we're so distracted by other things and there's always so much going on. And do you feel that a lot of that is to do with the type of society that we live in now? We're all very, it's all very fast paced. We have to be productive all the time. There's always something that needs to be done or achieved or a target to be met, that we don't have that time to slow down perhaps and just to tune in to ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I could not have said it better than the way you put it. Don't we have all to fit into a specific model? Aren't we all having a lot of pressure to fit into a lifestyle and an image that our environment expects? And I'm speaking on that I would potentially be still susceptible to that as someone that is self-employed and teaches yoga. But knowing how it is when you are in a corporate environment. By the way, I'll share with you a little bit of a funny story. At the time when I was in a corporate environment, I was feeling the need much more to do something different, that I would have an earring. I never worn an earring since I left banking. But at the time, I felt the need that I needed. I don't have to fit. I was wearing pink socks. I don't think I ever owned pink socks since then. But and I would work, yeah. So this is, I think it's a human nature to want to be authentic to ourselves. I mean, of course, I don't suggest that people start wearing pink socks to be authentic. It was just my, let's say, silly way of at the time wanting to say, okay, you know what, I may be working in banking, but I can be slightly different from everyone else. I think that this is very normal. And this is something that is ongoing and often goes undetected. And it affects tons of decisions that we take, from the places we hang out, the people we interact, and even the lifestyle that we end up adopting. You spend a lot of time telling people about eating. How much of the eating has a massive social weight on it?
Yeah.
The evening, the alcohol. People think that if they stop drinking wine, they all of a sudden have to lose half of their environment, their friends. And it takes a lot of courage sometimes for people to dissociate from that. But this is a stressor that is ongoing. It's like having someone pointing a gun at you saying, you have to order another round of wine.
Sure.
You cannot miss your social gathering for a yoga class. And of course, there's a price to pay.
I wonder whether actually a lot of people aren't necessarily even aware of the construct around their lives that they're sort of adhering to and living in. And so it can be difficult to take that step back and to see it, can't it? I mean, when you worked in banking, for example, do you think people were aware of how the stresses of the job affected them? Or do people just see it as part and parcel of life and that's just the way it is and you have to deal with it?
I think no. And I think this is something that I have come to realize both later on as a therapist, that people adapt. People are amazing. As creatures, I think we are incredible. Call it COVID, call it whatever it is. We will adapt. We will stay at home. We will mold into whatever restrictions, environment or ourselves put in. But there is, and we will forget. We will take it as a new norm. So this is it, and this is what really struck me at the time, because I was seeing my, let's say, 34 years old colleagues looking like 90 years old, and my 50 years old yoga teachers looking as 25 years old. And then you know, I'm making these rough numbers up a little bit, but you see where I'm coming. And I thought, when I'm 50 years old, I don't want to look like 1,000 years old. I want to look like more young.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's because stress is highly aging. It stresses the immune system, that causes inflammation. Inflammation is a major driver of aging, and that happens inside and out. It's not just looking older on the outside. There's all these physiological changes happening on the inside as well because of that increased fight or flight response in the sympathetic nervous system constantly in overdrive. Interestingly, you're also a nutritional therapist, and I'm just interested in where that fitted in. When did you do that training? Was that after the yoga started or alongside it?
They went hand in hand, actually. Pretty much at the same time I started practicing yoga, I signed up for a nutrition course. And I mean, it is May. I don't know when this will go out. May, there is a lot of talking about mental health. And this is what kind of triggered me, because at the time, my partner went through a bipolar episode. And I reached out to someone that I knew socially, that I knew he was working through alternative medicine. I said, okay, you know, what can happen now? So I started reading about mental health, and this hit home for me. And I realized after a while that, you know, there are too many terms here I don't understand, and I have to go on Wikipedia and look up. I might as well go and do a proper structured course, which took me to the Institute for Optimal Nutrition, Patrick Holford's course. And I think that there, you know, obviously, you know, I kind of start connecting the dots a little bit more about how food affects overall health and to some extent stress response. So this was it. I think that there is, I want to take a moment here and say that the following, that whatever we choose to do, whether it is yoga and whether it is adopting certain nutritional guidelines, I think it has it goes beyond the physical aspect. And this is something that people can consider on many levels. So, for example, one of the things that I was adopting in the beginning of my nutritional journey was like some form of fasting 10, 12 years ago. The reason why it really hit home for me at the time, I didn't know anything about telomeres, and I didn't know anything about, autophagy or whatever else. Now, these terms are like, you see them all the time. I didn't know anything, but I was I had read this book, and it was saying how nutrition comes to us available through nature, and we don't need to really go out and necessarily work for it. We can go and pick up apples and eat. But if we don't do that all the time, we are letting this, it's as if we are showing our gratitude back to nature by not taking as much in as possible and letting other animals live with it. So without wanting to go for too long on this path, I would want to say that there is always like a metaphorical and a lot of, if people want to think of it as spiritual aspect, to any type of diet that we choose or any type of lifestyle that we choose, this may give us the meaning that a lot of us or some people may be missing at the moment in their life. It may come not by leaving their job and moving to Africa, saving children from something. It might mean by just staying in London, staying in their job, but just making a small switch, skipping one meal, adopting a practice that is like helps them be more calm and being more present, such as meditation, for example, or breath work with their family. And it is this this is how they can change the universe. Maybe, who knows? Yeah.
No, I like what you're saying there, and I think again it comes back to what we touched on earlier about connection, almost that you have to have that connection with whatever. It's not just eating the good food. It's feeling that connection between that and then how you respond to it. And the same with meditation or breath work or yoga. It's not just going through the motions. It's understanding how that is then affecting you and being connected to that. So I think that's really important, what you've just said, actually.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And just to touch on the fasting really quickly, more because it's something I'm quite interested in. This is something you then worked with some of your clients with in the nutritional space when you were looking at autoimmune disease and cancer. How did you incorporate that and what sorts of things were you advising your patients at the time, your clients at the time?
I always like to start from where people are. So if someone is eating, let's say, five times a day, then I would say that potentially we can look at cutting out the snacks. And this can already be on the path to fasting. We don't need to go into extremes. If someone is eating three meals a day, and the first one is at 7 o'clock, and the last one is finishes at 7 o'clock again, can we bring the dinner an hour earlier, or can we push the breakfast 2 hours later? And if we do that, straight away we have moved into what would that be? 59. So we are already very close to the 68. So this is where I would suggest, and that's what I do really with my clients. I would ask them, where are you? How close can we move towards a 68, towards a one meal a day, towards a 3 days fast?
And as you say, because we can't just expect anyone to suddenly overhaul everything overnight. It's unlikely that they'll understand it or stick to it, or it'll be a long-term change. So just making those small adjustments is the way to go. So no, I find that really interesting. Now,
do you practice? How far, by the way, is your fasting schedule? I'm sure some of the listeners will want to know now that you said that you are into it.
I do. So I've done, I mean, I call it time-restricted eating, which is a similar thing, really, isn't it? It's the same principle. So I've done that for about 5 or 6 years now. So I tend to have my first meal of the day at somewhere around 11, 11:30. And then I usually stop eating at around 7-ish. So my window is about 8 hours. I mean, sometimes life gets in the way. And for whatever reason, you know, I can't have my food until later on. Or, you know, if you're socializing with friends, sometimes you do have to let that go a little bit. So I think it's also important to be flexible so that you can have it as a long-term habit. But I'd say I do that 6 days a week. And I mean, the benefits I've found are amazing. I have so much more energy. I sleep better. My skin's better. I just feel that it does me good. And what I always say to people is to experiment, because it might be too short an eating window for some people, and they might need to extend that to 10 or 12 hours. But actually, studies have shown that even eating within a 12-hour window, you still reap so many of the benefits with regards to chronic disease risk, you know, which includes diabetes and heart disease and all those other things. So I think people have to work out what fits with them and their lifestyle, but experimenting is really important.
And can I ask you one more question now?
Sure.
Because I think I know the answer, but and it's been already 5 years, so I hope you have not forgotten. How more flexible did you find you being when you adopted this time restricting diet in terms of what you eat? Basically, what I'm interested in saying is, did you find that you would be able to even have a little bit more calories, or even a little bit foods that before they would trigger you in some ways, and now you were much more okay with them just because you were adopting this approach? It's a question.
And it's a really interesting question. The answer is yes, it's made me much more, I call it metabolic flexibility, but I've made that up myself, really.
Yeah.
I don't have to be as particular about how much I eat or even the things I eat, although I am, because I like to eat in a specific way. But with eating within that time restricted window, I just eat as I wish to. I eat when I'm hungry and I eat until I'm full. And my weight has stayed exactly the same for the last 5 years doing that. I don't count any calories. I don't track anything. I don't exclude food groups. I don't do anything specific. But eating within that restricted window has given me a real flexibility with regards to that. And actually, that's very empowering. You know a little bit about my story, but I have been very overweight for a lot of my early adult life. And one of the biggest things that I think helped me to keep the weight stable has been the time restricted eating. So I'm a huge advocate for it.
I know the podcast is about yoga and breathing.
Yeah.
But I don't want to digress the conversation, but no. I think the more we mention these things, the more people will feel like maybe there is something more to it than just like depriving myself and moving into a famine state, which of course nobody ever gets into. Definitely. A famine state.
I know. And just whilst we're on that, actually, a lot of people do think that when you fast or you restrict your eating times, that all you're doing is reducing your calories, don't they? And they say, well, that's why people lose weight. I personally don't feel that's true. I really eat a lot. You know, I'm hungry, I train a lot, and I eat a lot. And my calories are exactly the same, I believe, as if I was eating throughout the day. It's just that they're all in that shorter space of time. So it's not about reducing the amount you eat. It's just keeping your eating within a window. So it matches the way we were evolved to eat, you know, matches with our circadian rhythm and our sleep wake cycle. And that's how our organs work as well, because they actually all have their own rhythm too. And they secrete, you know, specific enzymes at different types of day, depending on what we are supposed to be doing at different times of day.
100%. I think there are studies like, I mean, I will very quickly mention it. Mice eating as much as they want, mice having restricted the calories, mice eating the same amount with the ones that they eat as much as they want, but only in a certain period of time. The two last categories, identical markers.
That was the study that Sachin Panda's been doing a lot of work on this, hasn't he? And he's published some amazing results. And actually, it's not just about weight loss or management. The risks for chronic diseases go down hugely. Energy levels go up. Blood sugar management's better. The risk of neurodegenerative diseases goes down. Inflammation goes down. So all of these biological markers are responding positively to keeping your food within that time frame.
It's all great. I'm wondering how many of the audience we have lost by now, because they're hearing about food.
Let's come back to the breathwork. That's where we were. So your background in terms of breathwork, you've actually trained both with Wim Hof, who's gained a lot of popularity over the last maybe 5 years or so, and more so in the last couple of years, I think, and also with Patrick McEwen, whose program is The Oxygen Advantage, and people may have heard of that as well. How are we often breathing wrong? What is it that many of us are doing when it comes to our breathing that isn't serving us as well as it could be?
Let's first off address the following concept, which I bet that a lot of your audience will be familiar with, but it's a good reminder that breathing has three aspects to it. There is the biomechanical, which is what most people are familiar with. I would imagine that everybody listening to this podcast knows that the upper chest breathing is dysfunctional breathing. There is also the paradoxical breathing, where a lot of people will end up to when they will be breathing in and deflating their belly and breathing out and pushing their belly out. It's the reverse of what naturally we want. So this is the biomechanics of it. And yoga is fantastic in terms of improving that. Then we have the biochemistry, where it is all the work of the Buteyko method and Oxygen Advantage. And there is where we are looking at how we can manipulate the three gases. Primarily, it's the two of them that we care about, of our bloodstream, which is nitric oxide, carbon dioxide, and oxygen. And finally, it's the emotional aspect of breathing. I don't think anyone expects to hear the same breathing from their partner when they are sad, when they are happy, when they are excited, and so on. And actually, I have looked into studies where they looked into the amplitude of the breath, the amount of air, and they show them one after the other, and you will see how erratic the amplitude is in the extremes, when we are like overly excited or overly sad, and when we are calm and peaceful, you see a much more smooth pattern, more in line with what Patrick teaches. So with these three things in mind, I would say that anyone that finds themselves for prolonged periods of time depressed, sad, stressed, anyone that finds themselves having poor posture, so someone has a very kyphotic upper back, anyone that finds that they have pain in their hips, lower back, or neck, the biomechanics, or anyone that feels that they are running out of air very often and they keep their mouth open way too often, or even during the night, they snore. So in any of these symptoms, if any of these symptoms appear in someone's life, well, there you go. We know that breathing is compromised.
These aren't things that I think many people would trace back to their breathing. I mean, I think this is probably actually news to a lot of people, that all the things you've mentioned, from aches, pains, posture, energy, mood, could actually be linked to the way that they're breathing. So what should we be doing? How are we doing it the wrong way? What should we be changing?
I think that we can start thinking of our breath like our posture. And I think if we think of it this way, I think it will simplify things, because there are so many breathing exercises, and I'm more than happy to speak about it. I'm very passionate. You probably have to stop me at some point, because I don't stop when I speak about breathing. But before we go into all the technicalities, if our posture is compromised 23 hours a day, and then we go and do an activity, let's say running, and we're running with perfect posture, first of all, is it going to be possible? Very unlikely. But also, how far will that go? Not very far. So we want to improve our breathing when we are not conscious about it, when we are like operating on a daily life. Now, this is not always very easy. And in order to simplify it, I would say that the starting point should be to maintain nasal breathing throughout the day. Nasal breathing is the only way we can make use of nitric oxide. And with this, I don't want to go for too long to speak, but nitric oxide is one of the three body's blood gases, and is the one responsible, or one of the gases responsible, for what we call vasodilation, the opening of the airways. It's actually, and this is my way of selling it to my clients, is actually the ingredient of Viagra. So someone that is using their nose will have more open airways, will have more reproductive health. And I don't think we have many many people listening to this that they don't want to have better sex life. I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
So, and I'll tell you this to your audience. They don't have to take my word for it. They can test for themselves. And the easiest way to test for themselves is by maintaining nasal breathing at night. Now, the way to maintain nasal breathing at night, unfortunately, because we are asleep, is only by taping our mouth. And this may come as a surprise to people in the beginning. Usually, it is people get hooked after the second or third night that they have taped their mouth, and because they just sleep better. They sometimes will even wake up earlier in the morning because they have got enough rest and they are ready to roll with their day. And this is something that not only they will experience in terms of energy levels, they may experience it in terms of not having a dry mouth. But men in particular, they will experience also, if they are especially a little bit older, by having an erection first thing in the morning. And this has nothing to do with being turned on. It's a natural thing that men experience when they are young. It's the process of the penis flushing out any toxins. And this is something very useful for reproductive health. But that's not to say that it's not equally beneficial for reproductive health for women. So just to close this parenthesis about nitric oxide and nasal breathing, if in doubt, the easiest way for someone to keep their mouth closed during the night is to use any medical tape they can access from any pharmacy. So you buy for £2 or £3 a medical tape, you cut a small piece of it, you apply it on your mouth. A lot of people may in the beginning find that the tape has gone halfway through the night. That's fine. They can try a few more times. A lot of people, they will sleep through, no problem. And who does not want better sleep after all?
Oh, definitely. Don't get me started on sleep. That's another of my passions. So just to summarize then, with taping, because the first time I ever heard about or read about mouth taping, I was the same. It sort of took me back with surprise that that was something that, you know, was even a thing to try and do. So just to remind people that if they tape their mouth at night, it doesn't need to be fully taped shut. It doesn't have to be anything scary or like from a horror movie. It just needs to be a small bit of tape, just from the top to the bottom, just to hold their lips together. But you can still sort of breathe through that if you needed to, and even speak a little bit. It doesn't have to be clamped shut.
Correct. There is as you mentioned, the tape can be only for part of the cover part of the mouth. It can cover the entire mouth, of course, as well. Some people like to fold the two edges so that it is easier in the morning to untape. Some people, they don't like the stickiness. So that what they do is they apply the sticky part of the tape a couple of times on their skin. So some of the glue moves out and then they apply it on. You know, there are actually companies that produce tapes. Patrick McCone has one called MyoTape that someone can put on their mouth if they want to go more fancy than just a medical tape they can access from Boots. Ultimately, you know, we want to be breathing 24/7, and that needs to be addressed at night as well. We cannot just stick with the daytime nasal breathing.
Now, what about people who struggle with nasal obstruction for whatever reason? You know, if they feel that their nose is blocked, people can sometimes feel quite suffocated almost if they have to shut their mouth, if they're used to breathing through their mouth. Are there any advice you have for people to overcome this so that they can start to nasal breathe more often?
For sure. So for people that have any of the symptoms that you described, what they can do is they can tape their mouth during the day. So I don't think that anyone will feel as restricted if they are cooking and at the same time for 10 or 20 minutes, they have their mouth taped. It is usually a mental shift that one can do during daytime that it will make the transition at night a little bit easier. In terms of obstruction of the nose, the answer is quite straightforward. If one can close their mouth and breathe for 1 minute through their nose, they can breathe for 24 hours. The reality is that what we don't use will end up being lost as a function in the body. So the nose will be blocked if we don't use it. It will stay blocked if we continue not to use it. In the beginning, of course, it may feel a little bit awkward. And of course, there will be days that someone would have a very blocked nose. And, you know, maybe that night sleeping without taping their mouth might be appropriate. But let's not look at the exceptions and let's see. I mean, the benefits of breathing through the nose go way beyond nitric oxide. I just mentioned that because it stands out. You know, this is such a unique aspect of the nose that it is such an important anyway reason for someone to breathe from the nose compared to allowing their mouth to be used for oxygen intake.
Mm. And that's because the production and reservoir of nitric oxide is held in our nasal cavity, isn't it? And so when we breathe in through our nose, we're stimulating that production, and then we're carrying that nitric oxide through into our lungs, where it can then be diffused into the bloodstream. I was going to ask you about the other benefits as well for people. What other things can people expect to gain from breathing more through their nose?
Sure. So there is a paper from 2007 from Israel University saying that the nose is responsible for, what I don't remember the exact number, I think 93% of the body's air conditioning needs. And what they meant really by that is that the air, when it comes through the nose, is humidified, cleaned, and warm. Now, let's look. We have cold-induced asthma, which is for those people that are susceptible to their lungs and the epithelial tissue contracting when it arrives in their nose. I don't think they want to breathe from their mouth, so they have to warm it up through the excess of veins that exist in our nose. Humidified will make the exchange from the lungs into the bloodstream much easier, and that's something that we can support, the internal respiration. And finally, clean. This is something that, of course, clean air and bacteria and viruses has become a massive topic in the last year and a half. And this is, again, something that we want to be addressing through, can address only by breathing through the nose, breathing in through the nose.
And as you say, particularly over the last year, we've been wearing masks and things, but actually we have this really good filtration system stuck on our face that we're not using as effectively as we could be. So the message there really is people don't have to jump straight into it. They can try perhaps by just doing 10 or 20 minutes at a time, try taping their mouth at night, and then try and build that up gradually until they are breathing through their nose most of the time. We've digressed a little bit into nasal breathing, which is amazing. I find it absolutely fascinating. So I'm glad we've spoken about that. Just to come back to breath work as a general sort of topic, how have you found that that fits in with the yoga? People perhaps see that as two separate things, but you very much see them as two very harmonious things. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, for many people, the breath work is a practice of its own, and the yoga or the asana, anyway, practice or the physical practice of yoga stands on its own. And there's nothing wrong with people approaching it this way, but maybe they are missing out a big opportunity there. Because going back to what I said earlier, there are three aspects of our breath: the biomechanical, the biochemical, and the psychological. And the one affects the other. So I would argue that if we are to introduce some of the principles of breath work into our physical practice, we will be getting a lot more out of it. I think we a lot of the times go back into running because running is something that people, even if they don't run, they can relate. So imagine a runner having a nice paced breathing. I'm not here to suggest people how to run, but I'm saying, imagine like one individual running at a specific pace and controlling, synchronizing some way his breath with his running gait. Individual number two is breathing at the same pace, but his breath is erratic. Who do you expect after a while will outperform the other? And I think this is not really like a coincidence. It's not the biomechanics will be different in the first individual from the second. The biochemistry will be different as well. So without wanting to overwhelm, this, by the way, is something that we go into depth with Patrick in the course that we co-teach, Patrick McCone, Breathing for Yoga, where we are covering the biomechanics and the biochemistry. But ultimately, good posture will support a better diaphragmatic movement. And at the same time, soft breathing, light breathing will maintain healthy levels of carbon dioxide, a molecule that for a lot of people is just a toxin and they want to get rid of. But we do need them, and we can touch a little bit more on that in a second, that will support a better function of their muscles. So going back to the example of the two runners, an And this same thing applies for yoga, by the way, right? You know, I'm just mentioning running because something that people will be very easy to relate, even if they never practice yoga. So the two individuals, the first one will be able to support the muscle function and recruit his diaphragm and posture by maintaining a better breathing pattern, independent of what his running style is.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned carbon dioxide. We should probably just talk about that as well. There is so much to cover. People, I think, believe that they should be taking big, deep breaths all the time, and then that's the way to get more oxygen into our bodies. But actually, it turns out that isn't the best way to optimize our use of oxygen. And it's all to do with how our oxygen oxygen we take in interacts with the levels of carbon dioxide in our body. So would you be able to give a little bit of an overview as to why carbon dioxide is important?
Absolutely. So I will approach it in the same way that Patrick always does. In 1904, it was discovered by a Danish physician called Christian Bohr that carbon dioxide is needed in order for oxygen to be utilized. Now, this may come as a surprise to people, but this is what was discovered. And unless we have healthy levels of carbon dioxide, we cannot use the oxygen that we always have available. As you pointed out very insightfully, a lot of people will be told that they need to take more air in, but our body is very good at maintaining healthy levels of oxygen into the bloodstream all the time. I sometimes use the example of a time where I was in hospital and I was, while looking after my mother, there was someone that was next to her and she was brain dead. The nurses, whenever they were passing by, they were putting an oximeter into her finger. And the levels, because at the time I was already aware of the whole process, I was looking and the oxygen saturation in this individual that soon after, a few weeks later, passed away, was always healthy. That was in her blood, though. How about her brain? How about her liver? Did she have good levels of oxygen? How about her muscles? This woman never stood up. I never saw her standing up. And the answer is most likely not. So I would argue that although the saturation of oxygen was great in her bloodstream, it was not necessarily great in the organs because of failures that had happened. So we don't need to be afraid of carbon dioxide. At the same time, if we feel the sense of air hunger too often, if we feel that we need to take bigger breaths, these are signs that we need to train our respiration. We need to practice in such a way that doing breath work, adapt our the way we do physical exercise, yoga included, so that we can improve the usage of oxygen that is always there in our bloodstream.
So really what we should be trying to do then, to recap all of this, is breathing through our nose, but breathing softly and gently. It shouldn't be labored breathing. It shouldn't be that we're taking deep breaths in all the time. And our body is actually very good at regulating our oxygen levels for us. And actually the more deep breaths we take, sometimes that can throw that oxygen off balance because it disrupts the amount of carbon dioxide we then have on board.
Correct, yeah.
So yoga and breath work together, you use this in your practice very much for people who are looking to find more balance in their lives. So we're coming back to people perhaps who need to find that sense of connection, perhaps slow down the pace of life a little bit. Would you say that as a combination is an effective stress relief technique for people to try?
I think so. I think breath is very powerful. I would argue that is the quickest way to change our state with the second fastest, with the first one being our thoughts. So, you know, and I'm not against anyone of guarding their thoughts or affecting their state by thinking what they need to. But if they manage to control, and this is really what a lot of the times in my yoga practice, I'm aiming to do, because not every one of my students has the time to sit still for 2 hours, look at the wall and do breath work. But what I'm aiming to do is give them breathing exercises that within maybe in the beginning 5 minutes, later on 3 minutes, they can change their state so that when they are about to stand in front of an audience and give a presentation, when they are, I'll give you another example, when someone was getting married the next day and she could not fall asleep, she ended up doing some breath work. She was anxious. she ended up sleeping, and she messaged me the next day, said that I used what we are practicing in class. So it is ultimately trying to bring all of these thousands of years of history and wisdom from breath work and the science and the theories into everyday life, because that's ultimately what we want, right? Why do all of that? So that we can live our life, do the things that we enjoy doing.
Exactly. And that's the key, isn't it? Is finding ways for people to incorporate these practices into daily life. As you say, it would be amazing if we had the time to sit and do an hour or 2 hours, but life is so fast paced, and people are also after quick fixes. And I'm not saying it's a quick fix, but if it's something that can be done in 3 or 5 minutes even, then you can fit it into a lunch break, or you can fit it in when you wake up in the morning before you start your day, or before a presentation, or if you can't sleep at night. They're just small things that you can then, you know, utilize effectively. So what other things do you think people can try and do to address stress and anxiety in their lives?
I would say, going back to what we were saying in the very beginning, is discover what their true self, discover what they really stand for. Don't try to fit in. I think there is no bigger stressor. All the breath work in the world will be a drop in the ocean if they are stuck into jobs and lifestyles and patterns that they are not true to themselves. Now, if someone really believes and loves having cocktail drinks and every night and living like partying like till late in the morning, I think that's absolutely fine. And don't we know people that they will have a glass or more of whiskey and they live very long in life. They believe in it. They think they even find there is like the elixir of life for them is whiskey. Now, I'm not saying start drinking whiskey. I'm saying find what's true to you and understand that life goes beyond, you know, yoga, breath work is to raise awareness, helps us stand above the day-to-day task, the grocery shopping, the looking after family members, the looking after job and people that depend on us, and realizing what is true to us. And if you find that in this, what I have seen actually is that a lot of people that are very driven, very passionate, they live a lifestyle that would not be considered yogic in a way, because they have a company. They are like, they work like 15, 16 hours a day. Like, they have all sorts of different lifestyles. I don't want to go into too many details. They practice yoga. They practice yoga because this time is their time that they reconnect with themselves. I think maybe in some ways, or they do, maybe they meditate, some of them. Maybe they will not practice. I know people, I have clients like that. You would take out this 1 hour of their life and they will say, this individual would have, but no. These are individuals that are very passionate. They give jobs to people. They are like, they are living a life very authentic to themselves. And I would say that this is the main thing. Live a life authentic to yourself. Yoga, breath work, meditation can help you find this path. You don't need to stay attached to it, but maybe you will find that, you know, it is part of who you really are and who you want to be.
There's so much truth in that. Living in line with your values and the things that you believe in and the things that give you a sense of purpose. Actually, there are some studies that have shown this prolongs your life, you know, that sense of connection with yourself and with other people, actually, because then you're not fighting against yourself all the time and you're not fighting against the desire to fit in to something that doesn't go with everything that you stand for. And even just back to your cocktails analogy, there are a lot of people who will go out and socialize when they don't actually really want to. They're doing it because they feel that it's expected and that's what they should do and that's what everyone's doing. And especially with social media, for example, we see what everyone's doing all the time and we feel that we should also be doing that. But if we stop and think about what it is that we want to do, how do we want to be spending our time, then it's easier to find that. And Jay Shetty had two questions to help you find your purpose in life. And I think they were, what do you spend your time on? And what do you spend your money on outside of the things you have to do? So outside of your job, relationships, etc. When you have your own time and your own money, where do you choose to spend that? And that gives you the biggest clue as to who you really are and what means something to you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think, John DeMartinis will speak about it a lot, and he has these 13 questions again, that it is, where do you spend your time? What do you want? What do you speak all the time? What are the things that you manifest in your life?
Yeah.
What and so on. And it is this that show who we really are. These are the things that we effortlessly do. And I think once we do these things, then we live a healthy life. But I would argue that in the process of doing these things, in the process of discovering these things, because I think for a lot of people, they don't know what their value is in life. They don't know what they really enjoy. I think practicing yoga can help them find these answers.
Yeah, it gives you that space to block everything else out and just to come into yourself so you can start to hear what your mind's saying to you. So, no, I agree. I feel we've gone down a slightly more spiritual route now, which is lovely. For people who want to just have some good tips to build their resilience to stress and just to deal with it better in daily life, what would your top take-home tips be then?
Start with a very short practice. Find something that you are motivated in. I would obviously be able to give advice about some yoga postures or some breathing exercises. And people that they want to get some of these tips, they can go on my website. There are a few free resources there. But start with something and make it a practice. The word practice is a very interesting one. And it's very often, I know you have practiced yoga quite a bit. And I'm sure your teachers were using the word practice. The word practice is an interesting one because it's like a different way of saying habit. Pick up a habit and make it regular. It can start from 5-10 minutes. A lot of my students developed 1 hour plus long practices of themselves, and we build that up from starting from 10 minutes in the morning. That's usually how much time commitment I'm asking for people outside our sessions. So start from there. You can pick up breathing exercises, lots of free resources. My website has quite a few, but there are lots of others available on YouTube. And make this a habit. See, does it fit you? Does it serve you? And if it does, keep going.
Lovely.
That's my take.
I love that. That's a beautiful take-home message. Thank you. Now, Anastasis, you've been kind enough to offer our listeners an offer on some of the courses on your website. Would you just tell us a little bit more about that for them,
please? Sure. So apart from the free resources that people can get on my website, and they're all listed under the option of shop, so the free and the paid ones are under the same page, there are also, the listeners can get 25% discount in a yoga course that it is for beginners. It is developed for people starting out. It is their first 6 yoga postures, but also a 2-week breathing course. They can get the 25% discount by using the code HEALTH, HEALTH. So, and in this 2 weeks course, they will be doing a series of breathing exercises, and they'll be getting a little bit of information of the theory that at the very end, I expect, and that's what a lot of people that have gone through the course say, they will be better at breathing on a daily life without necessarily paying attention, without committing in 2 hours long.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. And what I'll do is I will put all the details of that in the notes that go along with this show, along with a link to your website and the code that people need to use. I'd just like to say thank you so much for this conversation. I actually feel we could have gone in so many directions and spoken for a lot longer about so many things.
Absolutely. My pleasure. It was very enjoyable.
Thank you so much for listening today, and I really hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Do follow me on Instagram at @thehealthspandoctor for information on the show, as well as recipes and health and nutrition advice. Until next week, let's live life better.